This is the podcast for December 2nd, 2011. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside St. Alphonsus Pancake Breakfast, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Bluegal.
Happy Zappadan, everybody.
Happy Zappadan Sunday.
I guess for new listeners who don't know about Zappadan, we should let you know. Zappadan is, we're on our fifth year. We started this in 2006. Mm-hmm. And it's a celebration of Frank Zappa that goes around the blogosphere. It took me a while to appreciate Frank Zappa.
Yes.
He's a little before my time. You, Driftglass, are kind of my older brother music source. In that regard, you know, you're the older brother I never had in terms of music.
I was going to say, you might want to
edit that. Yeah, given that we're married.
But we don't live in Alabama.
No.
So.
Frank Zappa died December 4th and was born on December 21st. And there was a discussion back in 2006 among the bloggers then known as the Aristocrats, which has now, we broke up that band, by the way, but we're all very good friends still, you know. Mm-hmm. But Mark Hoback, who is now at Fried Green Al-Qaeda's, wanted to honor Frank Zappa, and he said, should we do his birthday or his death day? And he came up with the idea of, let's just do a festival between the 2 days and call it Zappadan, which is perfect. Mm-hmm. And so every year between December 4th and December 21st, and December 4th is Bummer Nacht, by the way. That's what they call it because he died that day. That's, as Mark Hoback says, that's the last day Frank Zappa refused to die. And we celebrate for that entire, I think it's 17 or 18 days, to day zero, which is his birthday, December 21st. Mm-hmm. And so happy Zappadan, everyone. And you can expect miracles. The first Zappadan in 2006, John Bolton resigned.
Yes.
That was a miracle. And then the next year, Sandy Underpants of the Aristocrats went to the registry and had no lines and no waiting and free donuts. So that was the second miracle of Zappadan. So, you know, we're expecting miracles this Zappadan. And you wrote a 12 Days of Zappadan song.
I did.
The fifth day of Zappadan, which is December 9th, is Titties and Beer Day.
That's right.
So celebrate that any way you wish.
I you had to really haul that out of my mental attic because I totally forgot.
Yeah, I said somebody wrote a 12 Days of Zappadan. Who was it? Oh, it was you.
Yes, believe me, I just there's a couple still in draft, but this morning, post number 3600, give or take.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's not much of an anniversary other than it's 10 circles, which I guess means something. But it's more a matter of when I start looking for ransacking my mental I won't say attic one more time, my mental basement for stuff, for things, for connections, for stuff to write about, for material. I tend to half remember certain funny things or interesting things or artwork or what have you, and go, oh crap, I did that 7 years ago, or I did that 5 years ago, or I did that 3 years ago. Oh yeah, that's why I remember it. I had totally forgotten that I had done this. So thank you, Blue Gal, for being kicking me right in the memory.
There you go. And so happy Zappadan, everybody. Expect miracles and listen to some Frank Zappa. As I said, it took me a long time to kind of get where Frank Zappa was coming from, and now I do. And he would be all over this pepper spray for an Xbox 360.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that would be his thing. So,
if you think Frank Zappa has nothing to do with politics or I urge you to revisit a decade we call the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where
and
he was
the warrior against Tipper Gore and the record labeling and First Amendment rights and
testified in front of Congress.
Debated on Crossfire and you know, had a suit on and a short haircut.
And Frank Zappa, who, as far as I know, never did any drugs, never drank. No. He was very, very clean in that sense. Mm-hmm. What took no shit when it came to the things he believed in.
Yep.
The people I hung out with in high school were way more Zappa geeks than I was, so they would freak me out with their deep interpretation. These were the math geeks and jazz geeks who were just got it on a cellular level that I never attained. But I appreciate Zappa's better stuff, his good stuff, is the stuff that I can that's accessible to me. But as a warrior for free speech and individual liberty, he was right in the forefront. He just didn't take any shit, and he made himself explicitly clear. He drew a line, and he was really good at arguing. He reminds me in a certain sense of Elizabeth Warren in that way.
Yeah. He has that honesty in him.
He knew how to construct a simple, blunt, clear sentence that really got the fucking point across in ways that lots of people just can't seem to do.
Because he had honesty at his core, and you can see that in Elizabeth Warren as well.
I think I got to believe as a musician and a composer, he knew how to take the notes out. He knew how to pare it down till it was just exactly what he wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. So a sentence that was constructed by Frank Zappa was exactly what he wanted to say, no more, no less, and put across the point he wanted to make, no more, no less. And it was very effective. He really could just go toe-to-toe with the best of them on the right and best them. And so that's why part of the reason why we celebrate Zappa Dance. And, of course
– And he had four children and has four children. Who most of whom have become artists in one way or another. Mm-hmm. Dweezil and Moon are definitely artists and musicians. And I credit Gail Zappa with the fact that they turned out so well. I'm sure he did. He does too. But they all did. They all turned out sane and grounded. And I wish that for our kids too. So the kids that we are raising.
Yeah.
All right. We did our letter show last week. And a belated letter came in to us that was so awesome that we decided we wanted to read it.
Yes, we did.
Do another letter. This person asked us not to use either his first name or last name, so we're going to call him Rick James. Because the other opening for this show, we did St. Alfonso's Pancake Breakfast for Zappa Dan, but, you know, I really, really did not want to do the opening, you know, recorded live from just outside the back of Herman Cain's limo. And I'm so tired of Herman Cain, the sexism. But you know what's – this is the thing. I'm sorry to have this aside, but are we ever going to get to a point where how a candidate treats women is related to – in their own mind to their job as a politician? Because it's Bill Clinton. It's Newt Gingrich. It's John Edwards. There just seems to be this endless – I don't know. There is no political cost to the political system as a whole for one individual man to treat women badly or to use women.
Well, I would argue that eventually that day will come as women get more power in politics and more power in the economic sphere. Those who don't fall prey to joining the side of evil, signing up with Team Evil, as they grow in influence and power in women already have an enormous amount of influence and power in the world. But when it comes to the public sphere, it's still early in the game. It's still, you know, it was only 30 years ago that having a single woman on television was shocking.
Yeah.
That having divorced people on television was shocking. And that was less than a full generation ago, depending on how you measure generations. So I would argue in the long term, absolutely. But in the short term, remember that politics is an ancient, ancient art that comes out of the warrior culture, that comes out of tribal leadership, that comes out of the prescriptions that were written down, the things that were codified by Machiavelli, that it's about power. It's about seizing and holding power. It's about conquering other people. It's about forcing other people to do your will. The gentlest explanation of politics is, I think, Hunter Thompson, who said politics is the art of controlling your environment. It's the art of getting other people to do what you want them to do. And when you can either do it by force or by persuasion or by both. Machiavelli says it's better to be hated than to be feared than loved, because, you know, love can run out, but fear is forever. And so you have a really ancient culture in which dominant, egotistical, persuasive, charismatic people tend to rise to the top. And those are the very people who, on their way up, seduce or compel everyone around them to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
Use them, lose them, and move on to the next one.
Yeah, and there's also, you brought up the women who joined Team Evil.
Uh-huh.
And that's, you know, this idea that was promulgated during the suffragette movement of women being more moral or the being on the pedestal.
Right.
Which is bullshit. You know,
right,
there, are
exactly.
just as, there are just as many women out there being a traitor to the to their gender as mm-hmm. being a force for their gender. And there are plenty of women out there willing to be traitors to the cause. That's, you know, I used to date a guy who said, you know, you'll never make it because there's too many traitors in your ranks. There never yep. will be a full force feminist revolution because there are women out there willing to have a 13-year affair with Herman
sure.
Cain. And I'm not blaming the victim here. I am not blaming her for coming forward. I think it's extremely brave of her to do that. But there are more than enough women out there who think power is an aphrodisiac, and boy, he likes me, and so I'm going to...
He's the Jovan Musk oil for men of power.
Yeah.
And sorry for the 70s, 80s. But it's also, this is why the Lysistrata idea will never work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's just way too many people, way too many women who are more than willing to sell out the cause mm-hmm. to get ahead, which is not it, – it's human nature. It's not nothing
You always bet on the side of human nature, as you say.
I always do. There's nothing more interesting or more fascinating. It drives all literature, all art, and it's entirely – it is simultaneously completely predictable and entirely spontaneously beautiful when you least expect it. People who – suddenly come out of nowhere to lend a helping hand to a stranger or save a burning kitten in a house or run into a house to save a child are every bit as a manifestation of human nature as Ann Coulter.
Yeah. I just wish we could get to the point where when this sort of thing happens and when these revelations come out,
mm-hmm.
that the media at the press conference simply walk out of the room and say, you're not a candidate anymore.
Well, okay. I'm not laughing at you. I wish that were true too.
I'm betting against human nature there too, because the salacious story is the one that sells.
Our media is, we do not have a media anymore. We have a scandal sheet, rumor driven, innuendo driven, salacious driven. If we had a media, everybody in Iran-Contra, which celebrates its 25th anniversary this week.
Yep.
Everyone involved in Iran would still be in prison or would have rotted away in jail.
Right.
They didn't, because our collective – there's a wonderful piece by Charlie Pierce over at Esquire proving once again that I really am not Charlie Pierce. I am a fan.
See, you are Charlie Pierce.
He added me to his blog roll. So
good for him.
He did. Bless his heart. I really appreciate that, Charlie. But the anniversary of Iran-Contra is – I would argue you can point to modern American history and say right there, that point is when something – anybody could see that something had gone horribly wrong with our political system and our media system, because the media decided collectively this was too complicated a story and it was too intrigue and too difficult to cover, and the villagers sort of circled their wagons and decided we weren't going to pay attention to this. This was not going to be a big thing. We have decided it's not going to be a big thing. And that's something I want to get into later in our podcast, but it's because I do want to do this letter. But there are certain topics in our political world that are prominent by the degree to which the media absolutely refuses to talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
And in my notes to myself, there are certain topics that are protected as if by a 99th level wizard casting spells of indomining.
We'll talk about that now.
Yeah. Well, it's – There are – I'm going to segue a little bit into Andrew Sullivan territory just to note that Andrew Sullivan doesn't do comments at his blog, which is anti-blog. he's got this – a very long video and a bunch of writing about how comments suck and how they're awful and they're full of trolls and yada, yada, yada. Well, that's how these internets have changed. It used to be that was a sign of your interactive relationship with your readers.
Yeah.
Andrew Sullivan wants to control – what people get to – on what topics people get to disagree with him on publicly. So does David Brooks. So does Tom Friedman. This is why they don't go into forums where someone's going to ask them hard questions. So there are certain general topics that are broad and interesting, like have you noticed that the Republican Party is crazy? That the field of Republican candidates is less of a field of qualified candidates than it is a bunch of opportunistic viruses that have found the Republican body so weak and so exhausted and so rotted that they can feast on it, make a couple of book deals, and leave. And everybody thinks that's fine. They go, oh, my goodness, look at that. But it is absolutely anathema to our media to say out loud, the problem in this country is the right has lost its fucking mind. And the part that people like Andrew Sullivan will not talk about, David Frum will not talk about, is that the right losing its mind is not something that happened 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Or 5 years ago. All the time that Andrew Sullivan was carrying their fucking water and making a living being a cheerleader for really awful people, all the time that David Frum was writing speeches for George Bush, all of that time, the Republican Party was every bit as rotten and despicable and as loathsome and as racist as they are today. Just the coolant level on the crazy reactor hadn't dropped to the point where the general public was noticing it. The people who did notice it in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s were called liberals. And there's nothing happening in the GOP today that surprises any liberal I know. But Andrew Sullivan, David Frum, David Brooks, the entire apostate class of the conservative movement who all quit the party about 5 minutes after they were kicked out, none of them will acknowledge that this is true. None of them, because to acknowledge that that is true means to acknowledge that they were wrong most of
their own traitorhood.
And therefore, it is imperative to them that they revise history to make themselves look good. So, and in this conspiracy, they find many, many friends in the media. They find David Gregory as a friend. They find, sadly, Christiane Amanpour as a friend. They find George Will as a friend. They find most of the people, most of the clowns in the center are their friends because there's a whole history of this country, a modern conservative history of this country that's ugly and vicious and cruel, and it has a name, and that name is Newt Gingrich, that they don't want to fucking talk about. Because while this cancer was growing in the United States, and while people on the left were saying, look at this thing and it's happening to us, isn't that a tragedy? The left was being told to shut the fuck up.
Because and now you're traitors, because Newt Gingrich taught you how to talk that way so they could amass power.
Exactly.
Period.
And now that that cancer is full blown, they're all going, oh my God, can you believe what happened just 5 minutes ago? Isn't this a tragedy? Let's not look at what happened and let's not look at how we got here. Because if we looked at how we got here, I might have to take some blame for being, and I might have to go to the back of the line. I might have to lose my fucking gig at Tina Brown's little paper because I really, obviously, based on my own record, don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Tom Friedman might have to get fired from the New York Times. David Brooks might have to be perp walked to the door of the New York Times and thrown out. And since nobody in the media at that level wants to just lose their sweet job, they have all agreed that there are certain topics we're just never going to fucking talk about because the blowback from the talking about them is too frightening. And that leads us, I believe, very well to our letter.
It does. And
it's almost like there's a plan, Blue Gal.
Well, I'm going to read the first part of this letter.
Okay.
And then we'll save the P.S. because that's also a completely different topic and so wonderful. All right.
It's so sweet. All right.
Rick James writes, love the show. Keep it up. I was listening to your archives, to your reaction to the Waukesha County Clerk. Oh, that's an old episode. Discovering 7,000 votes in Wisconsin during a special election, and thought about how much I'd love to hear you guys talk about more in depth about electoral shenanigans. Ooh. I was very young during the 2000 election and living in Orange County, California, so it was a long time before I later found out all the horrible and obviously illegal stuff that went down, like the Brooks Brothers riot, black Democrats being put on a list of felons to disenfranchise them, Kathleen Harris's frank criminality, and the Supreme Court's partisan electioneering decision. In retrospect, 2004 had just as much suspicious behavior going on. And then, of course, there is the whole slew of voter ID bullshit the GOP is trying to get away with in the present. Just a quick anecdote. My dad is a diehard conservative, and it's very frustrating to argue with him. The thing is that every time he comes out with some bizarre screed like, Will Ayers is Barry Obama's best bud, or Acorn is a criminal organization, I have to already be familiar enough with the lie to debunk it. This is not entirely difficult, since I read far too many blogs and think browsing media matters is fun.
Yeah.
You're one of us. But often he's read something on Drudge Report that's far below my notice, like how expensive muffins are.
Speaking of Frank Zappa, see, it all comes back to Zappa
every time. Yeah, 6 degrees of separation from Frank Zappa. Everything is. Well, I'm too preoccupied things that are actually, you know, relevant to national security. I'll be blindsided with these faux stories and can only counter them with, Dad, that sounds like total horseshit.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Honestly, the biggest problem is that when we really get into the nitty-gritty of the argument, deconstructing why he thinks a certain thing and why it's not true, we keep bumping up against facts.
All those cruel facts.
Impossible to deny, real. Concrete facts, like budget numbers or percentages or what Obama has actually done, instead of what Fox News says he has done. My dad, and he is typical of all Tea Party folks in this respect, simply refuses to accept these. He refuses to accept facts. He doesn't reject the premise of the fact or argue with the interpretation or say the numbers themselves are true, but their collection and framing is biased. He just straight up does not believe me. He lives in another world. Mm-hmm. This is distressing to me, since he is a smart, caring man, and I love him. But the things he believes are simply lies, no way around it. And they often rely on racist premises. Really, Dad, our healthcare costs are rising because of illegals. It's not structural problems with the for-profit system. The worst of all is admitting that the country simply will not make any progress on these very serious issues until people like my regressive father are no longer a part of the conversation. I don't mean that in an Ann Coulter sort of way. I'm not advocating violence. But a huge chunk of America will fight tooth and nail over things that are clearly not true in the least. And it is this know-nothing group that prevents us from getting medical care that works, properly funding public services, ending messy military adventurism, or dealing with the very real and very scary aspects of global warming. It's just a damn shame that nothing can move forward on these issues until these poor saps die off. Which is about the same time the worst consequences of ignoring these problems will come back to hurt us. Signed, Rick James.
Rick James. Yeah.
And it's a wonderful letter, first of all. I want to thank you very much for writing. And I was heartbroken by the emotion in your letter.
Yeah.
That, you know, you love your dad. And, you know, that's the truth. You know, you do love your dad. And
honor thy father. Yeah.
It's a tough call.
Yeah.
But I think you've said it best, Driftglass, when you said this nation cannot survive half fox and half free.
No, we just can't. We just can't. And we're not. The thing that our electoral system misses mm-hmm. is that these people don't care if they win elections. They want to be enough of the sand in the machinery that they can just stop the system. Mm-hmm. They don't want the government to do anything anymore except cut them checks for Medicare and Social Security and make sure that the cops show up at their door or when someone rips them off. That's all they want. And everything else can go fucking burn. And so they really don't give a shit who's president. As long as they have enough people in the Senate, they have enough of a vote someplace where they can be a bone in the throat of democracy and just stop the system from working, that's fine with them. And it gives them something to be angry about. It gives them something to hate. The worst time for the GOP was when they owned the House, the Senate, and the White House, and the majority of the judgeships and the majority of the governorships, because that was arguably the most catastrophically mismanaged time in modern American history. That was the height of the Bush administration. And they had to sit there and bite their lip because they were looking for some goddamn Negro or uppity woman or liberal to blame for it all. And they kept coming back to the reason we're losing, the Iraq is going fine, it's just that the liberals and the media keep lying about it.
Well, and I found it really interesting how that segment of the population was really, really quiet while Bush was touring the country with his mandate to privatize Social Security.
Yeah. Yeah. Never said a word.
Never said a word.
Never said a word. No. Never said a word about deficits. Never said a word about the war. You know, all these people who were – this again, this goes back to the massive amount of revisionism that is required for people like this to stop themselves from going down the basement and hanging themselves.
Yeah.
Because to come to terms with the fact that they were active participants in everything that they now claim that they always hated is such a textbook sense of a textbook case of denial.
Mm-hmm.
A textbook example of the schizophrenia that comes when you live a fucking lie. And these people are living a lie. They supported all the bad shit that's now crashing down in our heads. They did. They went out and voted for it. They were proud that they voted for it. What I heard most from conservatives after 2004 was, ha ha, fuck you, shut up, we won.
Yep.
All right, you won. Great. You won it all. You won everything. And then everything that liberals had told them was going to happen, happened. Every bad thing about banking deregulation, every bad thing about Republican politics, torture, suddenly we're torturing people, we're wiretapping people, all the horrors that unchecked conservative power brings with it came crashing down on our heads, and they couldn't fucking stand it, and they went crazy. The problem with, I would argue, with Rick's dad, and my dad was the same way. My dad was a Nixon Republican. And the problem with – and he married a crazy lady, and they went off and lived a crazy life until both of them died. And it was very sad.
Well, not your mom. The crazy lady your dad married was his second wife. That's who you're talking about.
It was his second wife, and she was nuts. You know, she was a racist in her heart, except for the good ones, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And moved across the country to avoid essentially dealing with – lots of problems. So we all have this in our family circle or our friends at some level. We all have to deal with people where our lives touch the lives of others with whom we profoundly disagree. And the problem with these folks largely is that they're crazy. They lost their mind. They got everything they wanted. They got the biggest fucking blank check in history handed to the man they said was the greatest president ever elected. And everything liberals told them was going to happen has happened. And they would seriously rather take this country down into – burn this country to the floorboards, burn this country down to the studs and trash it than admit that they were wrong, because they can't do it. They simply are not brave enough. They don't have – they might have been in wars. They might have flown fighter aircraft, but they're not brave enough to admit that they were wrong. They were wrong about a lot of things, and that liberals were right, because that's the converse. The converse is – holy fuck, those dirty fucking hippies that they've been hating for 50 years now were right all along. And the hard hats and the thugs and the George Wallaces and the Curtis LeMays and the Strom Thurmonds and all the rest of these fuckers that these people have followed because they're essentially little fascists who want this country run for the privilege of white men. All the people they followed in their lives have turned out to be liars and racists and hypocrites and frauds, and they can't fucking deal with it. So they just
– So that's why they deny fact on a regular basis. Yeah.
And that way doesn't lie madness. That way is madness. That is the sign of someone who's lost their fucking mind. And people who are crazy shouldn't be participating in our democracy. But the right depends on people like this. The right created and cultivated and flattered and pandered people like this. They created an entire party mechanism designed to find these people, give these people a sense that their concerns are being addressed by their political party, tell them that they're not really crazy, that everything is all the little voices in their head are really true. They took all the voices in their paranoid minds and externalized them and created it to Fox News. They externalized all their paranoid virtue rage and created Rush Limbaugh. They took all the psychosis in their hearts and turned it into a media extravaganza that feeds back into our political system. And
related to that, the media feeding into our political system from a corporate perspective, we want to make sure we get to Rick James PS, because this is this was a discovery for both of us.
Yeah.
And it's really important. And that is that he pointed us to a blog. I guess it's a blog. I'm just going to read the article, and then I'll tell everyone where it came from.
Yeah.
The article is titled, or the blog post is titled, A Must Read, David Brooks on Shale Gas. For those who are following, and I want everyone who's listening to this to keep track of how many Frank Luntz terms are in this blog post.
It's Frank Luntz bingo.
It's Frank Luntz bingo, everybody. Okay, here we go.
Uh-huh.
For those who are following the debate in this country on shale gas development, as I am, today's column by David Brooks in the New York Times is a must-read. In balanced terms, Brooks summarizes the future energy and economic potential of America's enormous shale gas endowment and the current debate surrounding its safe and responsible production. Got that, everybody?
Yeah.
I counted six so far. The benefits of shale gas development in terms of economic growth, job creation, and energy security are without question, he points out. The only question is whether our political leaders will permit these benefits to be realized.
Mm-hmm.
Brooks is an independent thinker and keen observer of the American political landscape, so his words carry weight. His column makes a valuable contribution to the important debate on U.S. shale gas development. The end. That is ExxonMobil's blog.
And that was written by ExxonMobil's Vice President of Public and Government Affairs.
Right.
And just in case you think this is a one-off, this is just something that David Brooks – this popped into David Brooks' head. I gave him my Non-Sequitur of the Month award this month because, as many of you know, the New York Times runs this god-awful, horrible, Lockhorns-like, unfunny column once a month called The Conversation, which is where Gail Collins and David Brooks pretend to be talking about matters of importance because they have to fill up some column inches. And in a conversation that was ostensibly about Mitt Romney, David Brooks goes way the hell out into left field and out of nowhere comes up with this. This is from David Brooks, from yesterday. But the bigger problem is that Democrats may lose the spirit of enterprise. University town voters tend to be put off by the policies favored by the aspiring entrepreneurial classes. They side with environmentalists over people who like pipelines and shale gas, for example. Literally out of nowhere, in the middle of a conversation, David Brooks just brings it all to a stop to say, by the way, it's those goddamn university environmentalists, for example, who are opposing those lovely people who are in favor of pipelines and shale gas that are an example of why Democrats are wrong. And as I finished up with, the reason I quoted this was an example, a real-world example of why the size and reach of the platform from which one is able to lob one's opinions actually matters enormously. Mm-hmm. And why simply ignoring people like David Brooks doesn't work. David Brooks took time out a couple of times now in his New York Times column to give free advertising to ExxonMobil.
Exactly.
And ExxonMobil picked it up and pumped it right back into their advertising and said, that independent, keen-eyed observer and deep thinker David Brooks thinks that shale gas exploration is good, so should you. And that's why the incestuous relationship between corporations and media is – this is one example, at least, of why this is such a huge problem. Today we find that, for example, Greta Van Susteren's husband is an advisor to the Cain campaign.
Yeah.
Which she didn't bother to mention. George Will's wife is an advisor to the Cain campaign as well, I think. I'm not sure which. David Gregory's wife was an administrator at Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, I forget which. You pointed this out a couple of weeks ago, Blue Gal.
Yeah, Fannie Mae. She was a vice president at Fannie Mae. In 2008, when the directors of Fannie Mae resigned, there were four of them that resigned when the government took it over and bailed it out, and she was one of the four.
And, of course, Mrs. Alan Greenspan has her own TV show on MSNBC, on that liberal MSNBC, every morning.
Yeah.
It's not that parts of our media are flawed or have difficulties or have conflicts of interest. I feel like every time we do this, every time we sort of go down this road, I feel like we're riding into Rome at the height of the corruption of the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
It's not that one part or another part of the institution is corrupt. It's the entire thing is rotten from the head down.
Mm-hmm.
And That's
we're nailing the theses onto the wall and saying, here, there's going to be a revolution because it's corrupt from the top down.
And that's part of the problem with, frankly, Rick's dad.
Yeah.
Is that Rick's dad can do something he could never do a generation ago, really, without subscribing to Bircher newsletters. He can go shopping for people who tell him that he's right.
Yep.
He can flip the channel and find some guy in a suit named Sean or Bill or whatever who will look him in the eye and tell him that he's absolutely correct in every paranoid thing he believes and that he's a real patriot for believing it. And that's what's changed.
And that's
that we now have an entirely different the right has been able to dig deep enough into the soil of our democracy, stick its roots deep enough. They now will have to be hauled out and destroyed root and branch because now they have their own church, they have their own television, they have their own radio, they have their own publishing industry, they have their own book industry.
And the leading person in the media, David Brooks, the most centrist, reasonable person, is clearly an Exxon stockholder who does their bidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless he'd like to, you know, show – if he wants to print his stock portfolio on his page. I mean, I know he's always looking for 800 words to fill out his crappy
– That would be good. Today I'm going to print my stock portfolio.
Yeah, just and show so, us how know, many, how many would, you have – how much you
We would have much
what.
Less of a problem if transparency was part of the picture, you know? But it isn't.
No, it's not. And that's why there are – Among our media, there are just certain topics that they will not talk about. And part of
and
the reason
one of them
that
is David Brooks' stock portfolio.
Yeah. Well, part of it is who they are married to or what they have financial interests in.
Yeah.
Those things are just never touched. So that's why certain people – that's why there's a wide section of our population that we like to refer to as liberals who are never permitted anywhere near a microphone.
Yeah.
Because the first thing I would do if I were ever on Meet the Press is start asking David Brooks those questions.
Or David Gregory those questions. Just flip it right around. You know, just full disclosure, your wife worked for Fannie Mae as in a senior executive position in 2008. So let's just get that out there.
During the height of the corruption.
Well, and I don't know if she was during the height of the corruption because that's not clear. And I don't want to throw out accusations like that. She was their lead counsel. So part of what she was doing was negotiating and in fact negotiated away her own bonus for that year. So I mean, and maybe she had no choice and maybe she was corrupt and maybe she wasn't. I don't know the answer to that. There's no way to investigate that because those doors are closed to me.
Because the people who are supposed to be investigating that are married to that.
Yeah, exactly. So I can't make those kind of accusations, but the fact that David Gregory doesn't say that when he's talking about Fannie Mae and all the money that was going around in 2008, and he doesn't say he was married to that.
By the way, I got a big chunk of that dough.
Or not. You know, just say
Yeah. I simply mean if your wife was drawing
a salary.
An executive salary from an organization during a time period when you yourself say that organization was
making lots
doing
of money.
Things
yeah.
that are now being considered really, really dubious or corrupt. And whether it was or not, that's the party line of the Republican Party.
Come on Lawrence's show and say so.
Right. Right.
You know, they say, look, I can't cover this story because I'm too close to it. And
certain things that are embargoed. And the problem is, and this is my humble opinion, and you can take it for what it's worth. The things that are being embargoed, the things that our media will never talk about, are some of the most important things
in our
modern national life.
It's the future of our economy. It's our drinking water. It's the air we breathe. Don't get me – now we're getting very close to making me cry. Let's not do that.
Yeah.
I want to say thanks to our listeners, and I'm glad to hear that Rick James was listening to old episodes. We went and looked at our stats this week before we recorded, and it's not just that we have 3,000 listeners a week per episode, but this week we actually had 5,000 episodes listened to.
Yeah.
So, and we didn't hit 1% on our contributions of that. We did not have 50 people contribute to the podcast this week. That's our goal, is to get 1% of people who listen to any episode to contribute $5 to the podcast. That's what we're looking for in terms of support to keep going. So we appreciate your support. And Driftglass, you're up in Chicago this week painting, but we got a letter yesterday in our P.O. box. I want to share part of it. It's
You said you were going to hit me with something.
Yeah, it's from Bob, and his name is Bob. And he sent us a check, and we're very grateful for it.
Yes, we are.
But he said, I've been meaning to do this for, a couple of months. Was going to send you a money order, but since my company decided to do away with the extravagance of actual paychecks, hell, I remember cash. I've been forced further onto the grid by way of a direct deposit checking account. I had a checking account briefly 20 years ago. Didn't like it then, don't like it now. Just one more piss me off for us. Lucky to have a job types. But please note the check number, and he used check 101 to write to us.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob. Gotta have your priorities, don't you know? I've been eavesdropping on your conversations, listening to your podcast archives from the beginning. I think you two will be hitched by the next one. Actually, we've been hitched for a while. Congrats. But yes, I've been eavesdropping, like you're at the next table in the restaurant, and you're much more interesting than how badly the Browns fucked up again. listening back nearly 2 years is very helpful. I've been paying close attention to what the fuck has been going on in these so-called United States for better than a decade. But the crap storm is so relentless, it's difficult to keep the Santorum separated from the Shinola. He's a wonderful writer. We love our listeners. You guys are so smart. But anyway, you guys give me many, he, she, they, it, did moments. Connect a few more dots if you will. I listen mostly in my home shop. Okay, man cave. Yeah. While doing projects of questionable usefulness and have...
Put the saw down, Bob.
Put the saw down. And I have been busted a time or two with no one but yous in the room and me discussing and ranting right along with you. It's all right, though. My HMB, which he says stands for Honey My Baby, has since heard a few of your discussions and has conceded I'm no more weird than normal. I found you through Crooks and Liars, by the way. Outstanding resource. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Unjustifiably yours, Bob. P.S. Driftglass. Equilibrium is way overrated.
Well, Bob.
Keep on keeping on. So we appreciate you, Bob. Thank you so much. We appreciate all of the contributions that people make by PayPal or by snail mail. We have a button at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also listen to past episodes for free with no download and no registration. You can do that in your man cave or at your laptop or wherever you want. And we also have a P.O. box. That address is Professional Left Podcast, P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. And if you didn't write that down while I was saying it, that address is also at our podcast website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. We have an app which you can buy at the iTunes store. It contains our blogs, our podcast, and bonus podcast content, along with our Twitter streams. A special shout-out to our Crooks and Liars listeners who, like Bob, listen on Crooks and Liars on Saturday nights, and our Netroots Radio listeners who listen on Sunday nights. We appreciate you both so much. We have an email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com. We love it when you write us. We read all your emails, and you guys are awesome and smart, and we love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at that address, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you say otherwise. And if you don't want us to use your first name, just like Rick James didn't, you can just let us know that.
And if you have a name you want to be known as.
Yeah, exactly. Or,
Peter Parker.
Whatever. We're happy
Tuttle, whatever it is.
We're happy to oblige. So just let us know. How are the Internet Kitties doing this week, Driftglass?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties have given me the following statement to read. while it is true that they are advisors to the Santorum campaign, that in no way influences the content of their Fox News program, The Liberal Antichrist Exposed.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2011, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast. We're listening to the same audiobook, Ready Player One by Ernest Cline, narrated by Will Wheaton, the Will Wheaton.
We both just plowed through a big chunk.
I haven't plowed through yet. You have.
A big chunk. I'll say for both of us have plowed through a big chunk of Ready Player One, and we both enjoy it thoroughly.
Ready Player One's a really good book.
Yeah. It's the best trash mining of 80s culture I've heard in a long time.
Oh, yeah. And it's science fiction.
It is. It's a genuine science fiction novel made for 13-year-old, 14-year-old, 15-year-old adventure-loving science fiction geeks, which every science fiction geek really is at heart. But it has heroes and villains and faster-than-light ships and virtual reality and a real plot and real peril.
And a girl.
And a girl.
And
an awesome
a girl.
A love interest who's smart and nerdy and it's just a wonderful book, and it really is like somebody has had this mental attic full of trash, this 80s, 70s and 80s cultural trash.
Let's just give our listeners an example. His car,
sure.
His virtual reality car is the DeLorean from Back to the Future, but he has customized it by putting the voice from Kit
from Knight Rider
in the front, and he's got Ghostbusters labels on the sides, on the wing doors, and an actual flux capacitor of some kind. And Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah,
he's got the oscillation overthruster from Buckaroo Banzai, so he can drive through solid matter in the virtual reality world.
Johnny Sacco makes an appearance,
Gigantor makes an appearance. I'm not there yet. I'm only halfway through the book, so
I'm not going to say a word. Other than this is somebody with a mental attic full of just stuffed with 80s trivia, Dungeons and Dragons, science fiction authors, all of whom our readers will recognize, I'm sure, most of whom readers will recognize, and no place to put it. So he wrapped a science fiction novel around it and made knowledge of this in insanely granular detail necessary to the driving of the plot.
In a story that works, and that's
You have
really
to know
brilliant.
Scene by scene how weird science works, and have seen it 32 times to move along through the plot, and have played that while playing Joust.
Yeah, Joust is
in a pizza parlor in the 1980s.
Yep.
It's just a wonderful book, and we listened to it on audiobook because we do a lot of driving these days, and it's just it. And you know what? One of the coolest things was the 13-year-old boy started hearing people talking about video games and Atari and the history of that, which interests him greatly. And suddenly he's interested in this interesting story of a video game hero, et cetera. And it's for those of you who got off on Neuromancer and cyberpunk and that stuff literally from the 80s and from the 90s, the William Gibson novels, Neal Stephenson novels and so forth, but found them to be hopeless.
This is your antidote.
This is a very uplifting, much more happy. The world it presents is not particularly good, but the arc that you come out of the story on is much more hopeful.
All right, that's enough.
Yes, I'll stop there.
I haven't listened to the second half yet, so
I ain't going to tell you a boo boo about it. You'll love it.
Oh, good.
Love
all
it.
Right. So there's our bonus content.
That's right, baby. Always be closing.
Right.
The one failing of this book is it doesn't mention Glengarry Glen Ross enough.
Oh.
So what are you going to do?
Well, that's not kind of the sci-fi pop culture of the 80s.
No, well, it is in my head.
Yeah.
So what can I say? I guess I'll have to write one of my own.